Welcome again to Scots Language Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison, and this is the programme that celebrates athing to dee with the Scots language, and maybe a bittie mair. In this edition, we've got news on a new centre in Aberdeen for Northern Culture, just about ready to appoint its new director. Listen on as we speak to the professor fa kens aboot it, and fa's deeing his annual lecture in Doric. And we hear about the books that's been translated into Scots, athing through the Gruffalo to Lord of the Rings. And we join storyteller Tim Porteous at Kirkenzie House, the site of Ian of the Jacobite Encounters. Now, if you're gonna boot near the Robert Gordon University in Aberdeen on the 13th of May, you're invited to a lecture card, Fa Do You Think You Are? Or The Things We've Forgotten to Remember. It's part of the annual series of professorial lectures at the university. And this particular lecture will be Dean in Doric. The speaker is Professor Peter Reid, Professor of Librarianship and Head of the Department of Information Management at the University's Business School. The lecture is based on a research journey Professor Reid did, travelling the length and breadth of the A96. So, before we went into the why Doric question, Peter told me a bit about the content of the lecture.
Well, the lecture's really going to be about the culture and the cultural heritage of the northeast of Scotland and why it shapes our sense of identity. It's also to try and tease out so many of the things that we've forgotten about that are really valuable bits of our history and our heritage. And I also want to challenge folk into thinking about how we can present and understand and interpret our own history and heritage better.
Okay, before we go into why you're doing this in Doric in the first place, let's go a little bit more into the subject matter of your lecture. Take me back to that journey you had up the road, looking at different parts of the North and how we handle our heritage. What did you find out?
Well, we travelled the full length of the A96. We went from Aberdeen right through to Inverness to try and look at the cultural and the heritage offering that is there for visitors. We went into a' the main toons. We didn't go near the tourist attractions themselves because we can't find that they existed and that they were there. But we went into a' the main toons and we had a look around and we tried to understand if it would draw folk into those tunes and how the offering of northeast culture and northeast heritage was made in places like Kintore or Huntly or Elgin and so on. And we found some half interesting things and we found a fair number of quite disappointing things. But the one instance that really sticks out is in Inverurie, where we encountered a beautiful example of northeast culture just purely by chance when we overheard twa chiels in the tourist information office having a fantastic conversation in Doric. It could almost have been a visitor attraction itself, but it was just something that happened by accident. And that's kind of set me thinking about how we can present the best of our cultural offering in the northeast.
You know, you're using that example that happened just naturally. How can you capture that in a jar? Or how can you capture that and say, right, we're going to make that an attraction?
I think that's very hard. I think that really is a challenge. But I don't think that it's impossible to do. Most of our towns and villages have quite a rich history, a really rich story to tell. And we have lots of modern technological advances that help us to do that. In places like Newcastle, for example, they have apps that guide you around the city centre. There's a number of the cities in Scotland have done the same thing. We've got rich historical tales that we could be capturing and making available using technology. A town trail app that tells you the story, for example, in the Doric or at least in Scots. We don't want it to be so inaccessible that it alienates folk, but there's lots of things that we can do. It shouldn't just be the accidental overhearing of a conversation between twa chiels in an office.
But Peter, I mean, we're sitting in Robert Gordon University in Aberdeen in the business school. I'm a graduate of this business school. You're a professor in this business school. You and I, Ken, at the bottom line is I foremost in our minds. How can the money come out of this?
I think if we have a really important, well-developed cultural offering for the Northeast that is coherent, that's joined up, that isn't compromised by, shall we say, synthetic political boundaries, then I think that can be a draw to visitors. We have a malt whisky trail, we have a castle trail, we have a fantastic coastline right the way around the Northeast. That can draw visitors, but I think we can only really draw visitors and draw income if we think a wee bit more coherently about what it is we're trying to get.
So
folk.
Are we speaking about image then? Are we speaking about, we didn't realise, just fit our own images here?
I think we maybe ourselves realise what our own image is, but I'm not sure that I was projected as well as we possibly could.
Right, now let's get to the why you're doing this in Doric bit. Simple question. Are you going to be able to be understood? I mean, there's going to be folk in this audience that doesn't speak Doric.
Aye, and that's enough of pity for them, and I feel sorry for them. But it was important for me that I did do this in Doric. I was lucky enough to be brought up to speak Doric in the house, but still to be able to speak proper English when I needed to. It's something that's absolutely ingrained in me. The work that we're doing in the university to look at Northern culture and design seemed to lend itself to me doing this lecture in Doric. And I thought, OK, if it's at all possible, I'll give it a go. Of course, now I'm thinking I've made an enormous rod for my own back, but I think it's important as a statement for me to do this in Doric.
How long are you going to be speaking for?
It'll be probably about 50 minutes to an hour.
And you're going to have slides as well?
And I'll have slides as well.
Are you going to have subtitles?
I think I'll maybe only have subtitles for I far doon throw it into afa complicated Doric.
Right. Give us an example on a fit sort of sub. 50 minutes is a long time to fill, Peter.
Aye.
You can. You're probably half aware of that anyway.
Oh, I do it regularly.
So 50 minutes is in Doric about a subject that you're trying to... I've just been trying to get to the right heart of it and trying to analyse it, trying to be coherent about it. Fit kind of subjects or fits... How are you going to do it?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to be connected with that subtitle, the things that we've forgotten to remember. There's an awful richness of history that is commemorated elsewhere but is overlooked here.
Like fit?
Well, I'll give you a couple of examples. William Gordon of Farskeen at Cullen. He was a local laird in the beginning of the 18th century, and he learnt an awful lot about the fishing trade at Cullen and at Pernockie, and eventually went out to Norway. And he pioneered the salt preserving of fish in Norway. Now, he's weel kent in Norway. He's in the Norwegian Dictionary of Biography. We didn't mine on him in Cullen or Pernockie. Just a wee bit further along the coast, there was a family of lairds called the Stuarts of Boggs. And nobody mines on the Stuarts of Boggs in Scotland, but there's a street in Salzburg named after them because one of them became an architect and built the Prince Bishop's Summer Palace in Salzburg.
And of course, is it the Duke of Gordon in Fochabers that you were speaking about earlier?
Aye, the Duke of Gordon in Fochabers, the fourth Duke, the last great nobleman in Scotland to use Scots and to write in Scots, and he wrote fantastic poetry to his mistress who became his second wife in Scots, and that's as late as the 1820s.
Right. This must be leading some way. We're going back to the business heeds again and the bottom line. But you're not doing all this, Peter, for just one lecture. Fits the end product in this?
Well, the end product, I think, in this is partly the lecture, because I've been offered the opportunity to do a professorial public lecture and been offered the chance to do it on something that I am genuinely quite passionate about. But this ties in with one of Robert Gordon University's sort of strategic initiatives, which is connected with the development of the Centre for Northern Culture and Design.
Which will be based here?
Which will be based within the university. And a number of the themes that I'll be looking at in the lecture are the things that the centre will be looking at too. So developing coherent cultural narratives, or placemaking, or cultural identity, bringing together heritage and cultural practitioners into a more coherent group.
Will this involve musicians as well?
It will involve anybody that is involved in any aspect of culture. So it may be musicians, it may be potters, it may be writers, it may be people that run a castle. It could be anything.
And the future so far, so how far down the line have you got with this, creating this centre?
We are hopefully now very far off getting to the point where the centre will be established in reality and a director will be appointed, hopefully, within the next 6 months.
Peter, best wishes.
Thank you very much.
Professor Peter Reid of the Business School at Robert Gordon University in Aberdeen. And that lecture will be delivered at the university campus starting at 6 p.m. on the 13th of May. So it's starting at 6 p.m. on the 13th of May. Now I'm joined by my usual studio companion, folklorist Steve Byrne. Steve, you will be extremely interested, as a lot of folk in the folk scene and also in the ethnology scene, of course, about that last bit of information about a new centre for Northern culture being created.
Absolutely, aye. It's news to me, as we were speaking about before the show, but I think it's half interesting indeed, the approach that they're taking in terms of that idea, looking in between the conventional things that we think are of interest to folk, just listening to conversations in the street. And I thought it was interesting what he said at some point about maybe ken the sound of the rain voice, but we're also good at projecting it. I would maybe argue that we need a bit more work as well about ken the sound of the rain voice. You ken me and my interest in archives and going back and letting folk hear songs and teaching them to bairns and all that kind of thing. I think there's a bit of more work to be done in that direction.
But he mentioned, we're ken about the physical heritage.
Aye.
We're ken about the music heritage, we're ken about the written heritage, but there's a other bit of heritage that we're just beginning to identify now, fit as a card.
Well, it's the intangible cultural heritage.
Intangible cultural heritage.
Aye, the kind of living culture. It's the kind of the glue almost. It's what this program's about maybe is the language and the way folk express themselves in certain ways a day. And it's kind of the vehicle or the glue that hides all these conventional ideas of culture together. So.
And that's the bit that's difficult to capture and difficult to analyse.
Aye, absolutely.
But important that it is identified. Mayor Powell to their elbows, and we'll try and bring you more information about the development of that cultural, that Northern Cultural Centre as it progresses. Thanks, Steve. Fiddle player Gavin Marwick has produced a cracker of a CD in the first of Fitty's card, the Journeyman Recordings. The first two CDs are called The Long Road and The Far Horizons. This is for The Long Road. Tunes, The Bradalbin Reel, Queen Maeve and The Perthshire Races. Thank you. guitar work from his new CD, The Long Road, as part of the Journeyman series. It's a lovely collection. And we'll be finishing with another track from that album. Now, I'm joined by our Ain Journeyman, I gonna boot, never off the heat of the road. Welcome again, Steve Byrne. Now, Fitch, your chosen topic this month.
Well, Frieda, I found myself in a bookshop, which folk that kens me and's been to my house, I'm partial to a book or twa.
I'm on about in books as well, see.
And I come across a thing that was featured in one of the main bookstore chains that folk would ken. And it's a book called What the Clock Lady Heard. And it happens to be new out just recently, and it's the book of the month in this particular shoppy. And it's by the author of The Gruffalo that you mentioned earlier on. Of course, The Gruffalo is a Weel Kent Byrnes book. And of course, I'm having to cast an eye or twa hour towards Byrnes books these days. We have you to him to read some in the not-too-distant future.
It will happen. So you're focusing on the books that have been translated into Scots.
That's right. Aye, because The Gruffalo was maybe one of the first major translations in terms of Byrnes books, but there's other things out there as well. Of course, there's a longer history of translation into Scots. You can have a look at, for example, at the Scots Language Centre website, and you can find sections out of Lorimer's translation of the New Testament, mm-hmm. for example. So it's been going on for a long time. So just read you some wee bits and pieces, and we'll kind of touch on some through the rest of the show. Mm-hmm. So What the Clock Lady Heard, Clock Lady being a ladybird, of course. Lovely illustrations by Lydia Monks, and it's of course by the author Julia Donaldson, translated into Scots by none other than James Robertson. Mm-hmm. Yince upon a farm stayed a sonsy reed hen, a duke in a dub and a goose in a pen, a hairy grumpy, a yow like a rug, a big strong cuddy and a jimp wee dug, twa cats that meowed and purred all day, a bra, prize, coo, and a clock lady tay.
It's just music to your lungs, isn't it?
Exactly. So that'll be ringing out to your house in a year or twa's time.
And
Another een, an Afa Weel Kent author, of course, that's for Scotland, is Alexander McCall Smith. Absolutely Weel Kent as a novelist in various guises and other series that he puts out. And this is for the Presham Remotesway series, and he actually did an awful nice thing that he decided he would have the first translation of this latest edition of the book. It's a few years ago now, but he would have it in Scots first and foremost before it went into any other languages, again by James Robertson, and this time it's called Precious and the Puggies.
Precious and the Puggies.
Precious and the Puggies.
It's a puggy.
A pug or a puggy is a monkey in Scots.
Great word.
So a wee bit here for the flyleaf at the start of the book. So rule number yin, dinna help yourself to other folks' gear. Somebody was bracking rule number yin. Somebody in Precious Remotesway's skill was pochling things. First there was Tapio's cake, signed there was Seppo's jilly piece. What would be next? Why was the thief? And who was Precious going to make sure that the wrong person didn't get the blame? So
classic, absolutely
brilliant stuff.
No, but we're biding in Africa, aren't we, for your next bit of chosen music?
That's right. Aye, that book, that series is set in Botswana. No, a million miles away in Malawi. There's a feature of a new CD that's coming out for Brian McNeil and colleagues and folk around Falkirk. Brian comes from Falkirk, and it's the product of a Creative Place Commission. It was awarded funds by Creative Scotland, lottery funding, Falkirk Community Trust, and various other partners as well. A double CD that's coming out in Green Tracks Recordings on the 1st of May, mm-hmm. and a wheen of different songs on it for all sorts of folk around Falkirk, but interestingly has a link with Malawi, because in the Cairn Ironworks and around the Falkirk Foundries, they made iron pots, and it was discovered when they went out on a trip to Malawi. And of course there's a long history between Scotland and Malawi, as we mm-hmm. can, for some of the government projects and the place names. Even there's a Blantyre in the country.
Mm-hmm. I've been there.
Aye, that they had actually still fund some of these pots in existence back in autumn 2014. Wow. And some of these pots are for the 19th century, so they're 100, 150 year old that folk are still using. They're that good quality. So aye, with a song kind of featuring that sort of combination of the histories there. And it's Brian McNeil singing To Feed a Hungry Child.
From a furnace flame to a herdsman's hame, through tribe and race and nation, from the foundry's roar to a hard earth floor, who can count the miles? From a craftsman's art to a mother's heart, with joy and jubilation. From the steeple spire to a village fire, to keep hunger from the child. From the steeple spire to a village fire, to keep hunger from the child. Man's hand draws o'er the land, skilled and hard and calloused, and a mother's eyes neath a different sky saw when he held and smiled. Then on his trade ship carronade, with Falkirk parade for ballast, and by Braes and Banks she gave her thanks, then went to feed her child. And by Braes and Banks she gave her thanks, then went to feed her child. And the Mulder mines were rolling o'er the cannon, on the plains of Waterloo, where Bonnie fought the road. As he makes three legs of honest Falkirk iron, to stand among the coals and cook at different people's brews. And the mother mains, the cries of all the dying, and the washing of the spears at the dawning of the day. And the memory of hungry children crying sends her hand back to the pot to stir the tears away. Was it right or wrong for the Island song to swell the cannon's chorus? Or was the soldier's hell a shot and shell, an iron song defiled? Could a peaceful moon find a better tune and lay the words before us? But it's a brave lot to fill a Falkirk pot and feed a hungry child. But it's a brave lot to fill a Falkirk pot and feed a hungry child. That it's a brave lot to fill a Falkirk pot and feed a hungry child.
Brian McNeill with To Feed a Hungry Child from his new album, The Falkirk Music Pot, out on the Green Tracks label. Quite a few interesting references in that song, Steve.
Aye, that's right. I was just kind of listening through there. Folk might be wondering what the references to Waterloo and Boney, Napoleon Bonaparte, might be. It said that the cannon that beat Napoleon at Waterloo was actually made at the Carron Works in Falkirk, kind of carronade, no less. So.
Fantastic references. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Malawi there, and I remember the trip that I mentioned. I was in Blantyre. I was following in the footsteps of a man called Robert Law on a book called Laws of Livingstonia. And Robert Law was a minister, I suppose, a missionary to Aberdeen. Mm. And he went out, of course, to establish schools and set up medical centres there. And he based himself on the shores of Livingstonia, and that's for the boats of slaves. He saw boat fares of slaves trafficking down that particular, you know, it's Lake Malawi now, but it was called Lake Livingstonia in those days. And the horrific scenes as he was watching these canoe full and boats full of slaves being transported through that lake. And one of the saddest things I think I've ever seen was the graveyard down from one of his schools that he established, and it was still there, the school, the bell. It was rows upon rows upon rows upon rows of people that had died from malaria. Mm-hmm. Names with like MacDonald, Morrison, McLean, everybody in that graveyard from Scotland had died in the early 20s, maybe teenagers had gone out as missionaries. Mm-hmm. And the swallows were, you know, skimming over the graveyard, and you just thought these swallows will be in Scotland very, very soon. It's almost like, you know, I'm getting a bit fanciful again. It was almost like the souls of the people who were lying there would always go backwards and forwards to Scotland. I need to cheer ourselves up.
No,
right. No, Steve and I were speaking before the music about the rich legacy of Scots literature we have in this country. And as I said, we have a long tradition of folks translating works of literature into Scots. No. Duncan Sneddon, a PhD student in Edinburgh University, is keeping that skill and tradition alive. He set out to translate J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings into Scots. I'll say that again. He set out to translate J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings into Scots. He's finished The Fellowship of the Ring and is about to start work on The Hobbit. Our reporter Ewan Campbell speared to Duncan fit why he thought it important to put this book into Scots.
Personally, it's a book kind of broadening out the range of material that's available for Scots readers to read, but also about making models for folk that want to produce new material to be able to look to and say, well, this is something that can be done. Here's a model that works and that we can follow in some respects. You kind of think of these Renaissance markers, folk like Gavin Douglas and so on, but quite commonly around Europe. There was this idea that, again, you were to produce a substantial piece in your own language. The first thing to do was to kind of serve an apprenticeship by doing an hour set in, for classical, say, for Virgil or for Cicero or for any of these classical markers. And that would kind of be your apprenticeship, kind of teaching you the tools of the trade, things about meter, things about word selection and so on. Saying that there's a bit of that going on as well, that this is your kind of learning for the maester. And when it comes to fantasy, there's no maester that's going to teach you better than Tom.
Right enough. In terms of sci-fi and fantasy and stuff, I suppose you've got Matthew Fitzbutton being a Gogo in Scots as an original work, and the new Saltire comic, and that. So there is a kind of room for manoeuvre when it comes to sci-fi and Scots language.
I mean, in some respects it's bracken new grun, but in some, there's sense that there's other folk that's gave a heed and that's done some bra work in this kind of thing as well. But I feel that there is near a sense that there's a tradition of sci-fi and fantasy writing in Scots yet. And, you know, the things that I'm kind of hoping today, again, am I only 25 years old? I still got some of the arrogance of youth about me, is to try and see what we can do about bringing such a tradition into being, bringing together some of the strands of things that's already been produced and looking to the future as well. And hearing a canonical text, and when you think in terms of fantasy and sci-fi, they didn't come more canonical than The Lord of the Rings, is sort of part of that, bringing that into being.
Right. Well, you said earlier on, why not just read it in English? So I suppose, you know, the points that you could mark is, well, if Abdi in a minority language can speak the language of the original text, why not just read it in the original? I mean, it's surely better for their literary understanding of what was originally intended and all that. So what would you say to folk that would criticise the translation with that?
But in terms of the wider question about minority language literary production, that isn't just the case for our setting. I mean, you can say, well, why would MD do a novel in, say, Sardinian? Or why would MD write poetry in Irish? When there's the wider markets, and as well, often questions of literacy that even folk that speak, for example, Scots, often don't read it that easily as well. But it's about challenging that. It's about getting folk into a position where they're comfortable reading serious texts in a language, where it's creating this position where folk can engage in culture and literary culture through the medium of Scots. They can improve their own confidence in reading the language. It can become a normal thing.
And is there anything specific about the work of Tolkien you think works particularly well in the Scots language?
Aye, there is a few. Particularly, I think, natural descriptions. When there's, I mean, the sort of kids that spend a lot of time kind of walking through wilderness. The other thing that worked really, at least I thought worked pretty well, again, you'll sort of hate to read that yourself and make your own judgments, was the mere kind of supernatural elements. So the stuff with the barrow whites or the ghosts that sort of licked on the hobbits just as they're barely out the Shire, and the ring wraiths and so on. Because again, there's like a rich tradition in Scots in stories and in ballads and things like that, that it felt appropriate in some ways. It felt just say easy to bring up so many Scots words that's got these kind of associations.
So have you got any favourite wee bits frae our setting that you would like to read to us?
I have got a few. The first gin is the poem that's on the ring. Three rings for the elven kings under the left, seven for the droich lords and their haws of stain, nine for mortal men weird it to thee, ane for the dark lord on his dark throne, in the land o' Mordor where the shadows lies. A ring to rule them a', a ring to fin them, a ring to bring them a', and in the murk to bin them, in the land o' Mordor where the shadows lies.
Duncan Sneddon speaking to Ewan Campbell about translating Lord of the Rings. Steve, that's a fair tack on in anybody's book.
Oh, aye, indeed. Fair play to him, aye.
But you've got mere books you want to mention that have been translated into Scots, for
aye, it's just biding mere in that kind of popular culture thing, of which Lord of the Rings is a part as well. Asterix, of course. Last year we had Tintin and the Derkiel and all that kind of thing. We've got a wheen of Asterix books now that have been our set as well. So here's a wee bit of fae. Asterix and the Gowden Huke.
I like it.
You ready?
Right.
That Gaul's no richt in the heed. He sent me this place for a handful of bronze bobbies. I own it new, and I hope you like what I've done with the place. I can gie him a speciality Cullen skink. The fish is gae fresh, just after ox kept fae my cilia.
Cracking stuff.
Brilliant, didn't it? Another in Asterix and the Pechts. The Pechts being the Picts.
The Pechts.
So this boy, he's lost his voice and he's been given some kind of elixir. So here he goes. By Nechten, of course, Nechten being the old king. By Nechten, yon elixir's gweed. I can spick. Fit if you can, I can gab, I can talk. And the other boys, oh no, my hearties, that's the Gauls. They're heeding this way. I can haver. He's havering. Dinna answer. If that doesn't work, pretend you're dead.
You see, last episode I said you were the very voice. You were the very voice that we're needing in Hollywood, you know, for Salter, the Scots hero. And as we needed to do, with spraying and blowing bit squiggly marks up and doing your arms.
Aye.
You are a dead ringer for a series. I'm your agent, like, as a language
signer. I'm eking out a career. I can feel my life.
You know, reading this.
Developing the formine.
To play them in. There's a huge future for you here.
Well, you're speaking about my appearance. So here we're going. Right? This is a classic author, Roald Dahl. A handful of his books have been overset by Matthew Fitt. The Egypts, which is Roald Dahl's The Twits. No reference to anybody here at present. Clarty Bairds, as you ken, an ordinary, unhairy coupon like yours or mine's, well, no mine's, but just gets a bit stoury if we dinna wash it. And there's nothing wrong with a wee bit of stour. But a hairy beardy's face is a different story altogether. Things hang on to the hairs. Things like broon brie get richt in among the hairs and bide there. We can dicht our sleekit faces with a clout and we'll look mair or less alright again. But the hairy beardy manny canny.
How do we get hold of these books?
The most of these books have actually been put out by Itchy Coo, which is James Robertson Matthew Fitt's organisation. You can look up itchy-coo.com, but you can get most of these books now in the main bookshops and online are the usual places that you'd look for these sort of things.
Thank you very much. New music new, another in for Brian McNeil's new album. Steve, you can introduce us and that. I'm working you hard, is it?
For Falkirk again, of course, the Falkirk Music Pot. This is maybe Brian's best Kent song. The handful that he's wheel kent for, the lads of the fair. He wrote it back in the days of the Battlefield Band, and it's really about the Falkirk Trist cattle markets of the 18th and 19th centuries. And I love the song. It's fantastic, and you'll be singing it all day, I'm sure, once you get a listen to this.
Okay, here it goes.
Come bonny lads, lie near me, and let the brandy cheer ye. For the road from Fife to Falkirk's lang and cold and wet and weary. My trade it is the weaver at the bonny turn and lever. And we'll drink to the health of the farmer's dames while by my cloth the morn. Ye can see them a', the lads of the fair, lads of the Forth and the Carron water. Working lands and lands we gear, lads what sell you the provost daughter. Soldiers back for the German wars, peddlers up for the border. Lassies with a knife and mail and the kye at the Trist and fair at Falkirk. God did lead the pony, for the path is steep and stony, and the three langweeks for the Isle of Skye, and the beasts are thin and bony. And we'll take the last o' the siller, and we'll buy ourselves a gill or two, and we'll drink to the lads while by the Kye in Falkirk town the morn. You can see them o' the lands of the fair, lads o' the Forth and the Carron water, working lads and lads wi' gear, what sell you the provost daughter? Soldiers back for the German north, peddlers up for the border. Lassies wi' an eye for mair than the Kye at the Christ and fair at Falkirk. Stand there and I'll show ye, there's the turn below ye, but ye'd best bide here in the barn the next for the night watch to know ye. My brother, he's a ploughman, and I'm for feeing now, man, and we'll drink to the price of the harvest corn in Falkirk town the morn. Ye can see them a' the lads o' the fair, lads o' the Forth and the Carron water, working lads and lads wi' gear, lads what sell ye the provost daughter. Soldiers back for the German lords, peddlers up for the border. Lassies wi' an eye for mair than the Kye, the Trist and fair at Falkirk. The day on the drover, and the ploughboy sits on a tractor now, too high to see the clover. And the working's no so steady, but the lads are vast already to drink the good health of the working man in Falkirk town the morn. You can see them all, the lads of the fair, lads of the Forth and the Carron water, working lads and lads wi' gear, lads what sell you the provost daughter. Soldiers back for the German wars, peddlers up for the border, lassies wi' an eye for mair than the Kye, at the Tristan fair at Falkirk.
And stuff. The Lads of the Fair, sung by Brian McNeil from his new album, The Falkirk Music Pot, out on Green Tracks label now. Some cracking lines in there, Stephen.
That's brilliant. See, if you, I'd love to hear a song like that about my tune, Lassies Wi' an Eye for Mair than the Kye. That is a cracker.
Another line that sits on a tractor new, too high to see the clover. Good on you. Congratulations, Brian. It's a lovely album. So, back to Steve again. As I said, I'm working your heart this episode. You've been let off. Me and Richie were speaking about it. You've been let off for too long. So, we just thought it would just be really cool to this. So, Edinburgh's traditional festival begins this month, Tradfest. Steve, a reminder of what is offered in Tradfest. Some of the bitties on your way.
Aye.
And fitness festivals are about.
Well, it starts on the 29th of April through the 10th of May. Tradfest, I suppose, is kind of following on for a longer history in Edinburgh. Oh, the Edinburgh Folk Festival that was run until 1999, and then in about 2003 I was involved in setting up Ceilidh Culture, which was a kind of a, you could almost characterise it as a fringe for traditional arts in Edinburgh. Abdi would put on their own shows and do their own thing, and it would be all put together in a big programme. And Tradfest is really what it's saying, you know, the typical what it does. It says what it does in the tin of traditional arts, our Edinburgh being curated and staged and put on by all sorts of different folk, and Tradfest through Tracks and Donald Smith and colleagues there have put that together in a brand new programme.
Pick out some of the bitties that we should maybe look out for.
Well, we've focused on a few things already in the last couple of programmes, but here's some stuff we've no mentioned thus far, which there's a thing called the Folk Film Gathering, which is for the 1st to the 7th of May at the Film House on Lothian Road. And any of the films that might be of interest to folk is Play Me Something. That's Tim Neat, Timothy Neat, a brilliant filmmaker. And he's got Hamish Henderson and Margaret Bennett featuring in that. The film is a fair age new, I think, but worth checking out. All sorts of films on there. 29th of April at the Storytelling Centre is a concert called A Fine Wee Lass, which is Mary Campbell, Kim Edgar and Emily Smith celebrating the voices of women in Scots song. And I love this one. We talked about Mondegreens the other programme there.
I love that one.
Aye. Well, this is a resource Alan Lomax on the 6th of May, and its subtitle is Dunking Their Heels in the Corn and Custard. Celebrating 100 years of Alan Lomax with Ewan McVicar, who's done a lot of the kind of notes and things for the Alan Lomax CDs that have come out. It's actually a mishearing that Lomax wrote down of Jimmy Macbeth talking about dunting their heels on the corn kist. But for decades, it persisted as dunking their heels in the corn and custard. So you check that out.
Good in. Right. I was up seeing Mamie Haddon at Burnham CD the other day. Mamie, who was a guest on the programme, telling us about the exploits and the adventures of when he and the band Silly Wizard toured the world, setting the standards for many to follow in the 1980s. So this is Silly Wizard, recorded live in 1983 at Sanders Theatre, Cambridge, Massachusetts, in front of an audience of around 1,200 fans or so. And this is Phil Cunningham taking the lead on tunes Scarcer Tatties and Lyndhurst. Silly Wizard from a recording made in 1983 and a standard of song and music that was set for many to follow. And the album there is called Live Again. Oot Nu. Live Again is Oot Nu, so get out and buy it. Tim Porteous is a storyteller for Preston Pans, or the Pans as it's called, in East Lothian. He's a past winner of the Edinburgh Tall Tales Oscars and says he owes his title to his family background of faith tales for his father, if I was a minister, and his grandmother, if I tell stories of everyday life and craters that bade in the woods. Tim is Ina the Scots Language Ambassador. He uses traditional folklore and local historical tales to bring folk together with a strong sense of place. Well, Steve met up with Tim in the grounds o' Cockenzie Hoose, and I'll leave Steve to tell you a bit more.
Aye, it was the site that Ina the Jacobite encounters round about the Battle of Preston Pans back in 1745, and would you credit it, was there nae a reenaction taking place that very day, as you'll see here. I started by asking him just about the local area in East Lothian, far both Tim and I bide. So I was driving down here the day for my him and Trinent down to Cockenzie, and of course you're for the Pans.
And the Pans, you're a Trinenter, so we shouldn't really be talking, eh?
So we're right here in the heart of East Lothian in terms of the history, and in the background here at Cockenzie Hoose there's a reenactment trailer going on for the battle.
Aye.
So there's a lot of history around.
Aye, well, if it's a belt of yourself, you're kind of about it, because this is a wee trailer for the main event in September, of course, which is the reenactment, where you hear the Jacobites and the Redcoats ding it out with each other in September. But here in Cockenzie Hoose, which is connected to the battle, folk dinner, I ken that there was a kind of an incident that took place here, because the Redcoats were hunting Cockenzie Hoose, and after the battle they surrendered.
Aye.
So the Hoose itself, which is magnificent, has a real direct connection to the history of the battle.
Right.
So it's quite appropriate that they hear a wee reenactment here, just to highlight the activities that the reenactors here will be doing later on in the year.
So this kind of history that pervades the hill of East Lothian, you're a storyteller. How does that play a role in your own storytelling?
That's
sound effects, we'll use that.
That's me, deed. I mind growing up here. I mean, I moved to the Pans when I was wee, so I'm not like a native Panner in that sense, that because I moved from Pilton into the Pans, and I have very vivid memories of kind of being welcomed here in different ways. And very quickly, the battle issue was not really taught at schools, but it was one of the things that was you picked up for neighbours who kind of tell you. And I found a cannonball, you know.
James, really?
A wee cannonball, aye. So that was really cool when I was wee. What's interesting about this place in terms of the battlefield trust that's set up and the activities, is it's one of the few battlefields that's really right on your doorstep. I mean, quite literally on your doorstep. Because the most of the killing was done where folk hae gairdens now.
So you shouldn't dig our deep.
So if you're digging our deep in your garden, you might find something from 1745. And quite literally, the archaeologists have come to the tune have actually kind of involved some of the locals to do that.
So in terms of your own interest, growing up in the Pans, you must have heard a bit of Scots language.
I did. And one of my tales about that is... I don't know if I can mention her name on the air, but she's likely dead now. So it was Miss Taylor who taught me, and she was a richt fearsome teacher, and she gave me the belt for using Scots.
What age would you have been then?
I was 7, 8.
Right.
So in those days you got the toys for everything, you know. I didn't really understand what I was getting the toys for. I mean, I said deed instead of dead, and it was only later that I realised that she was giving me the belt for my pronunciation of a word. So and yet the same teacher gave me a gold star for reciting "We slick at Curran to Marispisti or panics in Nibristi," you know. It's like, and so that early age, that kind of, what was that all about then? Why did I get the belt for using a language that I got a golden star for only a few weeks before?
I mind you telling the story at the launch of the ambassadors thing.
It's a kind of, it's a well-kent tale of mine, and I kind of use it just to illustrate the fact that Scots has been a language that's been kind of battered out of us to some extent by yourselves.
Aye.
It's been internalised, and it's real important to just use it in the way that you feel comfortable. When I speak Scots, it's a wee bit like linguistically relaxing. It's like
loosening your belt.
It's like loosening your belt. It's like the linguistic equivalent of putting your pajamas on. You know what I mean? It's just suddenly you can just say what you feel. The words just come out, and you didn't have to kind of correct yourself. We do it all the time, of course.
What kind of words then would you associate? I mean, I've not lived in Trinidad that long. I'm further up east coast than Arbroath, and I hear things like in the supermarket, folks saying the deck end.
A deck end, aye. I moved out the pan. My father died when I was in high school, so I moved out the pans, and my mother was lucky enough to get a place in the Canongate. It wasn't a fantuition these days, you know, like it is now.
I'm still bored now, isn't it?
So I moved out, but so when I came home in a funny kind of way about 8-9 years ago back to the pans, I remember being on the bus going back into Toon, and at the back of the bus there was these lassies, and it was the dialect I could really remember using when I was younger, and which was still there. And it's I been there, but it's having been abroad and being in different circumstances. Obdi, who kind of speaks Scots, kens it's a language that you deploy usually in times when folk are going to understand it. And my father, who was a minister here, he spent a lot of time in his pastoral work working with other folk.
Right.
But not a lot of time talking to his bairns.
So you have to share the stories of what you're saying.
Aye, and if you did, one day it's going to be too late. Share the stories and be a storyteller within your family. And the historical stuff's great, you know, and I use a lot of personal stories that connects to history, so you've got the mixture of the personal stories.
Just to finish up, we're talking about the pans. Of course, there's a big visual thing with the storytelling and the murals and everything that's going on in the town.
Do you think,
it seems to me as a place, you know, going through it, that it's kind of alive with some of these stories. The community's able to hear the sound of its own voice a bit more than some other tunes you might think.
I think the challenge is to make that, to give that a depth, to give that a sense that it's really rooted in community experience. And creative endeavour is I going to initially be maybe something that kind of is perceived anyway to be involving just you know, a few folk. Like here we've got this wonderful scene of folk all dressed up. Panners didn't normally dress up like Jacobites here. You go and do it in the local pub.
Really?
We're not always like this. But it kind of connects to that sense that creativity is about ordinary folk getting together and sharing what's common between them and experiences. And one of the things that I did last year with the youngsters was a storytelling project that connected to the tapestry, in which I got the youngsters to gang home and ask their mother or their father or whoever's looking after them, or whoever's maybe has got a story, a family story,
aye,
something about them. Now, some of the young laddies and lassies had a Polish background or Lithuanian or German, and that was brilliant and it all brought it through, and the cultural mix. But what was really significant was that the youngsters who spoke Scots found the ability to tell those tales in Scots tae, but also the tales themselves reflected the fact that history's all about us.
Aye.
You're walking in the footsteps of your ancestors here. That's all about us, and it's maybe no written down. And the end of the stories was a young lad came with a story about how his, I think it was his great-great, I'm talking off the top of my head now, but his great-great grandfather was saved from drowning in the sea just off the Gothenburg.
Right. And then a pub in the pans,
aye. And then a couple of days later, there was another lad that told a tale about how his great-great uncle saved a man drowning, and neither of their families had kind of kent each other. But through story, that connection was made.
Tim Porteous, storyteller and great company. Lovely session. And Tim is appearing as part of Tradfest in Edinburgh at the Scottish Storytelling Centre on Monday the 4th of May at 2 p.m. It's an event card, Bra Time with the Bairns, and the Hell family are welcome. So that's Monday the 4th of May at 2 p.m, part of Tradfest, an event card, Bra Time with the Bairns, the Hell family, suitable and very, very welcome with Tim. And on the 3rd of May, the day afore, you're invited to join me for a concert with a difference as part of Tradfest again at the same Storytelling Centre in Edinburgh. The first half of the concert, I'll be showing a documentary film I made in 1993, CAD, Troubled Fields, about the changing face of the North East at that time. And in the second half, I'll be doing the songs that came through that film. So join me and my pals for Troubled Fields and the Lyrical Heart on the 3rd of May at Tradfest. And that's about it for this episode. Save technical bits, Steve.
Aye, you can see various footies and things that we're putting up for some of the interviews folk that we're meeting on our Facebook page at rthews.facebook.com/ScotsLanguageRadio. And if you're so inclined, you can drop us an email, info@ScotsLanguageRadio.com.
Thank you very much. And thanks to your soon-sorter, Richie Werner, for has been awful quiet his last few episodes. Richie, are you still there?
That's a bit enthusiastic for this time of the day.
I should have maybe just left him sleeping there.
Maybe he wasn't paying attention.
Anyway, he's still there. And thanks to our resident Gannaboot Rumler, Steve Byrne. And join us again another time. We'll leave you with an appropriate bit of music for this political times in Scotland. It's a track card, Fire Dance, for Gavin Marwick's new CD, The Long Road. For me, Frieda Morrison, bye the new.